عليك دمعا يا بنت خير الأوصياء لك دار في قلبي مع دمي يجري مع دمي يجري حبي وويلا لك دار لك دار في قلبي مع دمي يجري حبي مع دمي أم أبيها يا زهراء
في ذا الولا جعفري واسمي بعز على لم أقل للطغاة بيوم بلا لم أصافح سوى كفها كربلا عش عزيزا أيا قلب في ذا الولا جعفري واسمي بعز على لم أقل للطغاة بيوم بلا لم أصافح سوى كفها كربلا جعفري وفي حبها أكتفي وبمر العصور ثابت موقفي جعفري وفي حبها أكتفي وبمر العصور ثابت موقفي وريدي والأذيني لامع اسم الحسيني في وريدي والأذيني لامع اسم الحسيني وفدائي بدمائي لولائي وفدائي بدمائي لولائي
الولاء للحسيني حب قلبي
سيدي صادقا أن يظل بكم هائما عاشقا لم تزل يا منار الهدى والتقى حبنا ماضيا حاضرا لاحقا هواك ارتمى حبنا دائما شيعة المرتضى واسمنا قد سما في هواك ارتمى قلبنا دائما شيعة المرتضى واسمنا قد سما مذهبي أنت وديني يا قطيع الوادجين مذهبي أنت وديني يا قطيع الوادجين وفدائي بدمائي لولائي وفدائي بدمائي لولائي الولاء للحسين
حب قلبي نور عيني
صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. Respected Sheikh Amin Rustani, brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We would like to start off the program with a recitation of the Holy Quran by Brother Hussain Saab after a loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أفلح من صلى على محمد وآل محمد. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والتين والزيتون وطور سينين وهذا البلد الأمين لقد خلقنا الإنسان في أحسن تقويم ثم رددناه أسفل سافلين إلا الذين آمنوا فلهم أجر غير ممنون فما يكذبك بعد بالدين أليس الله بأحكم الحاكمين صدق الله العلي العظيم
صلى على محمد وآل محمد.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك. عليكم مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. We just want to make one reminder of the narration of the martyrdom of Imam al-Hussein will be Thursday, September 20th for the English at 6:30 p.m. and for the Arabic will be at 9 a.m. on Thursday, the same day. So without further ado, we'd like to introduce Sheikh Amin Rustani to the podium with three loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد، صلى الله على محمد وآل محمد، وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله. These last few nights that we have, about maybe three more I think, we have talks and lectures. Imam Hussein has made it clear what he has in mind as he's moving towards Karbala. As he left Mecca, he gave that sermon that we covered yesterday. And slowly, now that there are less and less people following him, less and less people that are willing to give their lives for him, who are accompanying him to Karbala, you find that there's a little change now in the tone of Abi Abdullah alayhi salam. Still, he will be touching on certain issues and topics when he speaks, but now you also feel you get an akhlaqi vibe from Imam Hussein and the things he's saying. These, I think, are some of the most inspirational sayings of Imam Hussein that we can also take as motivation in our lives. Things that will help us make it through tough times. Things that will give us perspective. There is a poet, a famous poet by the name of Farazdaq, and some of you might have heard of him. And his poetry was known, and he was well known. He himself was well known, and his poetry is well known throughout history. The poetry that he would recite. This Farazdaq, he's a lover of Ahlul Bayt. As Imam Hussein is leaving Mecca, people are coming in for the Hajj. And so people are going to see Imam Hussein leaving as they are coming in for the Hajj. One of those individuals that Imam Hussein runs into is Farazdaq. So Farazdaq knows Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein knows Farazdaq. And a little small dialogue goes back and forth between them. Something that we can learn from as well. The Imam asks him, Farazdaq. Or maybe the Farazdaq asks him first. Farazdaq says to the Imam, where are you going? Like, it's Hajj time, you're coming out of Mecca? We thought it was the other way around. The Imam tells him, he says, if I don't, I'll be apprehended. This Farazdaq was coming, they say, with his mother from Iraq for the Hajj. So Imam Hussein sees this individual. He says, let me ask him, what did you see going on in Iraq as you came out? How do the people look at what we're doing? Me as Imam Hussein and not giving bay'ah and so on, and me coming towards Kufa, because as you all know, the letters came when the people found out that Abu Abdullah is coming or is looking for a place to go. They said, come to us, we're going to help you. So they sent hundreds, if not thousands, of letters to the Imam inviting him to come. So Imam is going. We all know he sent Muslim ibn Aqil. At the same time though, that's not enough for the Imam. Imam is going to ask also. The Imam is going to ask people if they have any knowledge of what's going on in Iraq. He's going to ask them for that information. So he asked Farazdaq. He said, how did you see the people of Iraq? I'm leaving Mecca because I can't stay. They're going to take my life. Tell me, I'm headed towards Kufa. Tell me about the people of Iraq. What's going on there? He said a word that, like, you and I, we better be careful because it applies to us today too. We better be very careful about it. He says, their hearts are with you. قُلُوبُهُمْ مَعَكْ. Their hearts are with you. That's wonderful. Everyone's heart is with Imam Hussein, right? Is it hard to love Imam Hussein, or is it easy to love Imam Hussein? I don't know. When I look at Ashura in Karbala today, and I see Christians coming and going, Christian priests in their attire and their uniforms coming and going, what I can conclude is that, no, it's not too hard to love Abu Abdullah Hussein. So here Farazdaq says, قُلُوبُهُمْ مَعَكْ. Their hearts are with you. They love you, Imam Hussein. Okay. But is that all that matters? Love of Imam Hussein? قُلُوبُهُمْ مَعَكِ But there's a problem. Their swords are against you. سُيُوفُهُمْ عَلَيْكِ Their swords are against you. All decree is in Allah's hands and whatever He wishes will be. This is what Farazdaq tells Imam Hussein. And the Imam replies, says, صَدَقْتُ He replies by saying, صَدَقْتُ وَاللَّهِ Yes, of course everything is in Allah's hands. وَكُلَّ يَوْمْ هُوَ فِي شَأْنٍ And every day He is, every moment He is busy with something. In other words, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is in charge of everything. Like, don't worry about that part. If I'm going towards Kufa and the people are like this, there's a reason for all of this happening. Now this, some use this against us or against Imam Hussein. Or against our understanding of Imam Hussein. They say, Imam Hussein, if he knows, if they told him that the people of Kufa had have killed Muslim Naqil, or if people like Farazdaq are informing the Imam that, hey, the people aren't really with you. They love you and all, but they love you as long as you don't get in the way of their dunya. Then the question is, why did he still go to Kufa? There are answers for that. There are many answers for that that I don't want to get into. But I'm just letting you know that be ready if someone asks that. This is a question that is asked. Why did he still go to Kufa? One of the things that I like, there's many answers that are given and that are convincing answers. One of the things is that Imam Hussein knows it's over anyway, right? Imam Hussein knows his life has to be given in the way of Allah. When he was leaving Medina and they told him to take another route, the side route, so that no one really sees him, he said, no, I have to just do what I got to do. I have to take the main route so I'm exposed. Everyone sees me, knows that I'm leaving, knows that I'm objecting to something. Here also, Kufa, when he's going to Kufa, this is part of the plan. Whether they're going to help him or not, Imam Hussein knows that his blood is eventually going to be shed. Whether it's on the way from Medina to Mecca, whether it's in Mecca, whether it's Kufa, he's just doing his job. Whenever Allah wants, Imam Hussein's life will be taken. So he knows that. That's one. Two, when he knows that his life is going to be taken, he's not going to leave any excuses. He's not going to let his blood go in vain. So, for example, when they say the one who finished the job of Imam Hussein was sitting on his chest, he asked him, do you know who I am? In those final moments, they say, when Shimr was on his chest, I've heard ulama say this, that he asked, do you know who I am? لَقَدْ اِرْتَقَيْتَ مُرْتَقًا عَظِيمًا You've climbed a very lofty place, which is the chest of Abu Abdullah. Do you know who I am? Of course he knows who he is. Imam Hussein is making sure that if I die, it's no accident. If you finish me off, and if I am killed at your hands, I want to make sure you knew exactly what you were doing. And he said, they say that Shimr said, yes, I do know who you are. And I know your mother, and I know your father, I know everything. He's not going to leave any excuses. So that on the day of judgment, people say, oh, we weren't sure, we didn't know. No. Things like this, they're not supposed to happen on accident. Imam Hussein, he's hitting many birds with one stone. One of those birds he hits, while he knows that the Kufans might betray him, is that when he's moving towards Kufa, these people of Kufa will never be able to turn around and say, you see, Imam Hussein, we were ready for you. And if you had come, we would have aided you, but you didn't come to us. Now that Imam Hussein knows he's going to be killed, might as well hit as many birds with one stone as he can. He has to prevent these types of things from being said later on. So let's just say Imam Hussein didn't go to the Kufans. And then he stayed somewhere else and he was killed. And then Islam went down the drain. The Kufans could turn back and say, and the enemies of Islam could put these words in people's mouths that Imam Hussein, as a matter of fact, Islam was lost because of Imam Hussein. You hear me? If he had gone to Kufa, then the people would have helped him, but he didn't go. He chose not to go, and all the bad things that happened after is kind of his fault. May Allah forgive him. Something like that, people might say. Hey, I mean, when that grand mufti in Saudiya, he says that the bay'ah that Imam Hussein broke was a legitimate bay'ah. He shouldn't have broke it. What else What are you going to expect? You can expect much worse than that. They'll tell you, Imam Hussein, if he had gone to Kufa, everything would have been good. He didn't come. We sent thousands of letters. So now that Imam Hussein is going to die anyway, might as well hit as many birds with one stone. This is not the ultimate answer. This is also one of the answers that's given. Okay. It says, صَدَقْتَ وَاللَّهِ وَكُلِّ يَوْمْ هُوَ فِي الشَّأْنِ فَرَزْدَقْ, you told me that their hearts are with me, but their swords are against me. And everything is in Allah's hands. In other words, like, if there is something here that has been decreed for you, O Abu Abdullah, there's no way out of it. I know that myself too. Imam Hussein tells him, you are right, all decree is in Allah's hands, and every day He is engaged in something. He's running the show. But if things go the way we wish, and the way we are happy with, we will be grateful for His blessings. And He is the one we invoked for us to be able to do justice in thanking Him. That's if things go the way we want. And if things fall between us and what we desire, I'm after a goal, I want to get to Kufa, take over Kufa, have some power, and do what I need to do. If things don't go the way I plan, the way I would like, the way I desire, anyone who has two things, one, pure intentions, ikhlas, two, and taqwa, rules his heart, this person cannot go wrong, will not go wrong. Two things he says that one should have always, so that whatever they do, eventually it counts for them, not against them. He says, if I am not able to achieve whatever I wanted to achieve in this life by doing what I did and I left Medina, that's fine, as long as I have the right intention and I have taqwa in my heart. Taqwa, brothers and sisters, is something that you have in you that causes you to listen to Allah, be an obedient servant of Allah. Once again, you see, this concept of wajib and haram and taqwa shows itself again. You can see it. Imam Hussein, what matters to him is that whatever he's doing and whatever the outcome is that he did it with the pure intention and he did have taqwa to go with it. It's interesting. No matter how small the deed, in Nahj al-Balagha we have this by Amir al-Mu'mineen. Amir al-Mu'mineen says, لا يقل عمل مع التقوى. Don't think that anything is small if you have taqwa next to it. Right? I want to recite a salawat, for example. Oh, that's just something small. But if throughout the day I've been having taqwa, taking care of the wajib and haram of Allah, that salawat, Imam Ali says, don't see it as small. لا يقل عمل. It's not qaleel. It's not little. عمل مع التقوى. If you have taqwa next to it. But why is it not little, oh Ali? What's the reason? It looks small. He says, وَكَيْفَ يَقِلْ. How can it be small? That which مَا يُتَقَبَّلْ. That which is accepted by Allah. If we want what we do to be accepted, we have to make sure taqwa is with it. And when taqwa is with it, and it's accepted by Allah, it's no longer small anymore. So don't underestimate, brothers and sisters, the little things that we do, but the condition has to be met. We have to try our best to make sure that we're obedient throughout the day. Then this little gift I present to Allah, He'll take it from me. But if I am not obedient throughout the day, throughout my life, and then I want to present big gifts, you know, you give a gift to somebody, but you slap them at the same time. They say, hey, I don't want your gift, and I don't want you to slap me. It makes perfect sense, at least to me. That's how taqwa works, brothers and sisters. Here Imam Hussein says, if I reach the goal that I have, all the better. If not, I still made it. Because as I said before, brothers and sisters, the ends are the means. How I got to wherever I got to is important in Allah's eyes. Did you take the right route or not? Yes, I did. Then even if you didn't make it to the right destination that you were after, you made it to the destination because you took the right route. It is so interesting how Islam looks at things. How Islam does not make it about the means almost at all. And how the ends are the means. God wants to see how you do things. Look at the flip side. Let me give you an example. If you or I make a judgment, Islamic judgment, the proof was against my judgment, but I made the judgment anyway. And it just so turns out that my judgment was right. This is so important. This illustrates what I'm trying to say so nicely. If I make a judgment based on something that I wasn't supposed to, and it just so happens that my judgment was right in reality, will I be rewarded for my judgment or I'll be punished? You will be punished, they say. But the judgment came out to be right. True, the ends was right, but the means you used to get there were wrong. You're in trouble. This whole idea and concept of bid'ah and innovation and all that, speaking where you're not sure, making judgments where you're not sure, speaking about Islam and attributing to Islam certain things where you're not sure, what's so bad about bid'ah? Bid'ah opens the door to a lot of miseries. Number one misery is that you are promoting using the wrong means to try to get to the right destination. The destination is the means that we use. If a person makes a judgment based on proof that they feel is what they need to do, and it turns out that their judgment was wrong, they still get rewarded because they took the right means. You see how beautiful it is? This is our Islam. So when I say the ends are the means, this is what I'm talking about. Taqwa dictates this. Taqwa secures such a goal. So now what do we have here? What can we take away for ourselves? Oh, I think it's pretty obvious, brothers and sisters. If Farazdaq says, O Aba Abdullah, their hearts are with you, but their swords are against you, how can I apply that today to my life practically? How can I do that? Very simple. I also have love of Imam Hussein. Very well. Good. But when it comes time to actually make sacrifices, when it comes time to go out of my way, do I go out of my way for Imam Hussein or not? Well, the Kufans didn't. As a matter of fact, they said, Imam Hussein, we love you, but we want you to go out of our way because we're going towards dunya. We want to secure our interests. There's a problem. I love you, but you're in front of me, Imam Hussein. Get out of the way. In other words, in my heart, I have two loves. I got the dunya and I got Imam Hussein. I got these two. That's not how it works. It's not going to work. You can only have one. Unless they don't contradict each other. Here they're contradicting. My dunya, the dunya that I'm trying to achieve now, Imam Hussein standing in the way of it. Okay, I want to reach the dunya, but I have to go through the heart of Imam Hussein. And that's what they did. You and I, we love Imam Hussein. Some people are of this opinion that, I don't want to even call it an opinion, because opinion has to come from a qualified individual. But some people have this ideology, this mentality that love of Imam Hussein will fix a lot of things, and it will. But the least is that it's going to destroy the dunya that we're living in if I just base everything on my love. No. I have to love, and then I have to learn what I got to do, and then I got to do it. Love of Imam Hussein is not going to be enough. I always say this. We say, Labbaik Ya Hussein on Ashura, but throughout the other 364 days of the year, when a haram comes up, when I get angry at my mom or dad, yes, they're not being reasonable in my books, but it doesn't matter. Allah said, even if they're not being reasonable, you can't hurt their feelings and disrespect them. 364 days of the year, when things like that happen, I don't bottle it up. I don't control myself. I don't say, Labbaika Ya Hussein, then. Then on Ashura, when I say, Labbaika Ya Hussein, Imam Hussein will look at me, he'll say, I love you still, and I will try to help you as much as I can. But maybe deep down inside, Imam Hussein says that you're not doing it the way I would have wanted you to do it. Labbaik Ya Hussein on Ashura means that 364 days of the year, I'm going to also try my best to do what he wants, to do what Allah wants. When the time comes, I can't say my heart is with you, but Imam Hussein, I'm going to do differently than what you want from me right now. Imam Hussein wants the Kufans to also have their swords with him. They have their swords against him. So they have love, but they don't do what he wants from them. It's not going to work. Now in the Akhirah, inshallah, Allah, because of this love, will help you and I if we struggled in this life. Maybe, maybe not. But the least is that we're not going to bring the imam of the time back if this is how we look at things. Oh, sahib al-zaman, ajjalallah ta'ala faraja, please return, gulubuna ma'ak. He'll turn back and say, yes, but are you fighting the fight that I want you to fight against your nafs or not? Yes, someone came to Ayatul Bahjat once again. This is off of YouTube. So the video is there. You can see it when there's the image is there. The voice is there. Someone says to him, I want to see Imam Zaman. I want to see Sahib Zaman. You know what he says? He says, how much have you listened to him? take your value up in his eyes. How much have you listened to him? But I don't have access to him. Maraji, they have access to all of the sources and they're really working hard to figure things out. What is wajib? What is haram? What do they want from us? It's not that hard, brothers and sisters, in this day and age. Recite the salawat. As I said, you see, that was a little more akhlaqi. Now, another one of those akhlaqi things, another one of those inspirational points he makes is the next khutbah, or the next saying. It says that the Imam stood amongst his companions somewhere along the way after Mecca. He says, as you can see, what has befallen us has befallen us. In other words, now all of you know what's happening and where we're headed. We're headed towards death. Times have changed. Evil has taken over. And good and merit have ceased. And only a little is left. How little? O Imam Hussein, how little is it? He says, like the drops of water that remain at the bottom of a container. If I empty this cup right now, there'll still be some wetness at the bottom of it. Yeah, a little bit. But the cup was full before. The drops that are left in it are nothing compared to what it has now. Islam was this full cup, but it had been emptied. There is a little bit at the bottom. And that's the only amount that Imam Hussein can use to somehow revive this Islam. The people are living in low and abased circumstances, like a grazing ground that has become hard and barely bears any vegetation. Do you not see that the truth is not adhered to? And that falsehood is not refrained from. In such circumstances, it is befitting for the believer to be eager to meet his Lord. In such abased and filthy circumstances, death to me is salvation itself, because God's satisfaction lies in it. And life with the oppressors is only hardship and weariness. Interesting, he says it like this, is hardship and weariness. Living with them, putting up with them, and I'm not going to get anything in my akhirah because my responsibility, Imam Hussein's responsibility, was to not live with them and be okay with them. This is the part, once again, that gets very akhlaqi. This is something that, once again, just like the previous saying, again he's reminding us that, hey, religion isn't something that, like these Qur'ans that some people have in their homes, which are very nice Qur'ans. They'll buy a Qur'an that, I don't know, costs how much. It's so beautiful. But it will be used as a decoration that you put on the bookshelf. And then sometimes the religion is next to it. You have a Qur'an, you have Mafatih al-Jinan, you have religion itself next to those books. Your religion is a decoration in your bookshelf. I'm speaking about myself first and foremost. Imam Hussein is against this. He says there are some people who have such a religion. As long as that book looks, as long as it looks good on the shelf, it's there. But once it takes away from the beauty of the other ornaments, gets in the way of things, what do? Very simple, they take it off of the shelf. He says, "An-nas abid ad-dunya." The people are the slaves of dunya. "Wad-din la'iqun 'ala al-sinatihim." And the religion is something they have only on their tongues. يَحُوطُونَهُ مَا دَرَّتْ مَعَيِّشُهُمْ. They keep it in their mouth. They move it around in their mouth. They play around with it. As long as things are going well and their lives are comfortable. فَإِذَا مُحِسُوا بِالْبَلَاءِ. But when the going gets tough, the ones who are really religious, the religious ones, dayan comes from deen. It says the ones who are dayan, who you can attribute religion and religiosity to them, qallu, they're small. They're small in number. Now someone here might think that, okay, the bala that Abu Abdullah Hussein is referring to might be the bala of Ashura. We can't handle that. Yeah, we can't. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala didn't ask us for that. Yes, in certain situations, if the time comes, if a person has trained themselves enough throughout their life with the wajib and haram of Allah, observing those, yeah, when the time comes, they can pass those bigger tests too. But in normal circumstances, brothers and sisters, bala doesn't necessarily mean losing a limb. or getting hurt physically. Bala can be anything. He says, when bala comes, when Allah wants to refine them, you know, when you want to make gold or you want to make a strong sword, what do? These blacksmiths, they put the iron into that, into the whatever you call it, the not stove, tanur, in a hot pit that they have. Let it get dark, get nice and red hot. They'll take it out. What do? Now it's nice and soft, this iron. They start hammering it. Why? So all those impurities come out of that iron. And then it gets slowly, it cools down. Or they don't even cool, they just put it in cold water, let it cool down again. And then they put it in the heat again. Slowly this sword becomes unbreakable. Cheap swords, you know, the ones that you don't want to be using on a battlefield. Don't you hate it when you're fighting on the battlefield and then your sword breaks? Doesn't that just stink? Those swords, they probably put it in heat like once, twice, three times. Cheap stuff, you know, from China or something. I don't know. But the real stuff that the kings have, rich people have, that they put it in there a lot. This sword, you can say in a way, muhisa bil bala, or futina. It was fitnad. It was balad. It was refined. Now Allah, look, the wording that Imam Hussein uses, something like this for us, that Allah puts us through some trials sometimes, or this dunya will put us through trials sometimes. And that's just part of the plan, that we have to go through that. It's going to be a little rough. Now, sometimes I can solve the problem through a haram means, and sometimes no, I choose to go the halal way. Halal way is going to be hard. Unless I take religion off my shelf for like a few minutes, I'm speaking figuratively here, do what I need to do, and then I'll put religion back up there again. Or as the Imam says, you keep it in your mouth like gum, for example. As long as it has some taste, you just keep it in there, you're twirling it around in your mouth and stuff. Once it loses taste, it has no benefit for you, what do? You either spit it out, or if you're under 5 years old, you probably just swallow that thing. We all know, we've all had that experience at least once in our lives where we swallowed gum. Anyway, إِذَا مُحِسُوا بِالْبَلَاءِ قَلَّ الدَّيَانُونَ. He says, that's when people, they're not willing to give up their dunya for their akhirah. عَبِيدُ الدُّنْيَا means exactly that. When you're the slave of somebody, what matters the most to you is what they say, what they want. You will do anything to just make sure that you secure their interests, their satisfaction, the master, the slave master, when you're somebody's slave. When you're abid al-dunya, that means it's as if dunya has a soul, it's like a living entity. That whatever that says, I will go for that first. Even if I love Imam Hussein, but he's number two on the list, I'll go through Imam Hussein because that's number one on the list. If I'm Abdullah, I will go through dunya. I'll put aside the harams so that I can reach Allah. He didn't say put everything aside. He said put the harams aside. Everything that's haram out there almost has a halal alternative and substitute. If I like to eat, there's halal food and halal, haram food. If I want to drink something, there's haram and halal drinks. Everything that has a haram version will have a halal version out there. Which one are you going to choose? Don't think that you're going to have deen and then you're not going to be tested. I put you in this material world for this purpose. Material world equals tests. Just like how an even number is divisible by two. You can't go to Allah and say, oh Allah, why is an even number divisible by two? Give me an even number that's not divisible by two. He will send you back to math class. It's one of the properties of even numbers that they're divisible by two, right? It is one of the properties of dunya that there will be balas all over the place. He puts you in the middle, they come and go. He wants to see how you're going to deal with them. Don't think that when you have deen, you can put it in the shelf and you're never going to be tested. And this is what the Quran says. It says, أَحَسِبَ النَّاسَ أَن يُتْرَكُوا أَن يَقُولُوا آمَنَّا بِاللَّهِ وَهُمْ لَا يُفْتَنُونَ. Do the people think that you're going to say, آمَنُوا, we believe. Ya Abu Abdullah, I love you so much. But then they're not going to yuftanun, which comes from fitna, once again, which means, you know, when you put that gold or that iron in the heat and, you know, get rid of the impurities and you refine it, You don't think that's going to happen? No. This is part of the deal. I recite another salawat. Let's talk a little bit about not despairing. So sometimes when we do something wrong in our lives, brothers and sisters, and I'm talking to the younger people out there especially, I want you to pay attention. And if we talk about these nights, we talk about not despairing. Also, it doesn't mean that, hey, have too much hope now in a way that you can let go of everything. Okay, Shaykh said, don't despair, so let's do whatever we want. That's, of course, duh, that's not what I mean. That's not what we're talking about here. We're just taking care of one side of things right now. Maybe some other time we have to, hey, people, be careful too. We have to talk about that too maybe sometime. But for now, because of the times we're living in and because of the struggles that are out there and the stuff that we hear, we're talking a little bit about not despairing. Now, sometimes when we do something wrong, Allah will tell us that I will cover up the wrong that you've done. We have verse of the Quran, إِن تَجْتَنِبُوا كَبَائِرَ مَا تُنْهَوْنَ عَنْهُ نُكَفِّرْ عَنْكُمْ سَيَّآتِكُمْ. If you stay away from those big problematic things, all the other normal mistakes that you make will cover them up. Cover them up. So someone here will say, right here, will despair and say, cover it up. But you know, covering something up, when there's something, there's something bulging out, when you cover it, you can still see it bulging out. I'm not satisfied with that. So I'm not going to be the same as the one who never committed that bad act. Because Allah covers it up, it might still be bulging out. And then you'll have a hadith that says, "At-ta'ibu min al-dhanb kaman la dhanba lah." A person who repents from a sin, and this one goes a bit further, a person who repents from a sin is like a person who never committed that sin. So then someone here will say, I don't know, you know, like God erases it, fine, but like whenever I erase stuff off of paper, you still see lines there, you know? If I like write something that I'm not supposed to write to somebody and then I erase it, if they hold it up in the light, they'll probably be able to see what I wrote. At-ta'ibu min al-dhanb kaman la dhanba lah, a person who commits a bad act but repents from it is like the one who never did it. Some misunderstand it and they take it to mean something like that. That it has an effect eventually, a bad negative effect on me. But then there's some wording in the Quran that you find, although I disagree with the understanding of what I covered so far. Those understandings, I think, are a little flawed. But let's just say that those are true, what we said, the interpretation that we had. But then you have some things in the Quran and other places that just finish the job, really. For those of us who might feel like in our past we had some darkness, if in my teenage years or after that, I was wrong in life, I messed up, but then I came back, but I'm still upset about the past. What is it going to do to me? What effect is it going to have on me? That type of stuff. There are some verses and there are some dua and some hadiths that really finish the job for us. No. Don't think of it as something bulging out. When I say I will cover it, or when I say that if you repent, it's as if you never did it, it means there is no trace at all. Not only is there no trace at all, let's look at this verse. إِلَّا مَنْ تَابَ وَآمَنَ وَعَمِلَ صَالِحًا. Except for those who, so some people have done some wrong, they're going to be in trouble, except for the ones who repent, believe, and عَمِلَ عَمَلًا صَالِحًا. They do some good deeds instead of the bad deeds that they've done. They make it up, compensate. فَأُولَٰئِكَ يُبَدِّلُ اللَّهُ سَيِّئَاتِهِمْ حَسَنَاتٍ وَكَانَ اللَّهُ غَفُورًا رَحِيمًا. No, it's not about erasing it or using white out and that kind of stuff. No. It says they will change it to good deeds. The bad deeds will change to good deeds. All of a sudden, now this is just a dumb example I'm going to give you, but that like big like birthmark that you had that was bulging out of your ear turns into an earring. It becomes an adornment actually. That which you were ashamed of before and you always hide, people come say salam to you like salam alaikum. And you put your hand on your ear so they don't see that thing that was bulging out of your ear. Now you put your hands down and you say salam alaikum, because now it's an earring, it's jewelry as if. God says, يُبَدِّلُ اللَّهُ سَيِّئَاتِهِمْ حَسَنَاتٍ. The sayyat and the evil, the bad, that will change to good. So now let it bulge out. I don't care. It's something good. It's something I'm proud of. If they erased it, for example, on my test paper, I wrote the wrong answer. It's happened to me before. Some tests, it's multiple choice. If you fill in the wrong one, you're not allowed to go back and erase it. You can't. They make you do it with pen. That was how it was like 15 years ago when I got my driver's license in Iran. I failed the first time because you had to use pen. And instead of going horizontally in the question, the answer sheet, I went vertical. So all the right answers were wrong. I would have passed the test. But since I read it wrong, and I couldn't go back to change it either. It was it. You're stuck with it. But think about it. If I get the test wrong, they erase it and they put the right answer. No one's going to look for where any traces of what you had said before. You got the right answer. Good for you. يُبَدِّلُ اللَّهُ سَيِّئَاتِهِمْ حَسَنَاتٍ. Yes, it has conditions, but when you do what you got to do, you're left with even more good. Wow, how is that possible? You know what it's like? It's like that home that you buy, like these people who like renovating houses. They buy the house. Dude, why are you going to buy a house that looks like that? They're like, give me 3 months and $50,000, I'll show you what I'm doing. Before you know it, the guy invests $50,000 but renovates that thing. That thing now goes for like double the price that he bought it for. Before, it was something you were embarrassed about. You couldn't take anybody to that house. But after, the same thing changes into something that you take pride in, that has value, that gives you value. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Quran tells us this. We have this in Dua Kumail too. Imam Ali says, لَا أَجِدُ لِذُنُوبِي غَافِرًا. Oh Allah, I don't find anyone who can forgive my sins. وَلَا لِقَبَائِحِ سَاتِرًا. I don't find anyone who can cover up my bad, whatever bad I have in me. وَلَا لِشَيْءٍ مِنْ عَمَلِي الْقَبِيحِ بِالْحَسَنِ مُبَدِّلًا غَيْرَكَ. Oh Allah, and I can't find anyone who can change whatever I have in me that is ugly, of bad deeds. I can't find anyone who can change them to good. Change them to good, transformation. غَيْرَكَ, except for you. This shows that, okay, then God can do such a thing and He will do it, or else Imam Ali is not asking for it. So another one of those cases where some people sometimes might despair, especially those who want to get a little more spiritual, but in the past they did certain things they weren't supposed to. They feel like they'll never make it anyway because the traces are there of whatever bad they did. No, brothers and sisters. Allah is too kind. He knows what He's created. We can never be ma'soom. So He'll give us the chance. Hey, whenever you wake up from your slumber, inshallah, sooner than later, do what you got to do, and I'll do the magic that I have to do. I will change that which was bad into something that you will take pride in and will help you in your akhirah. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله صلوات.
ثانية على حب القاسم بأعلى الأصوات. إلهي وسيدي ومولاي يا رحمة الله الواسعة ويا باب نجاة الأمة يا عبرة كل مؤمن ومؤمنة يا مظلوم كربلاء O Master Abba Abdullah You are the mercy upon us from Allah O oppressed, O martyr صلى الله عليك يا رسول الله هو على آل بيتك المظلومين Peace and blessings be upon you يا رسول الله and upon your Ahlul Bayt I will not forget Karbala I will not forget Husayna I will not forget Zainab I will not forget Qasim This night, let us remember the children of Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba that were killed in Karbala. Abdullah al-Akbar, 36 years old. Ahmad, the son of Hassan, 16 years old. Abdullah al-Asghar, 11 years old. Killed standing over the body of his uncle Hussein. After the Imam was left laying on the sands of Karbala, Abdullah al-Saghir ran to him to protect him, calling out, Amma, Ya Aba Abdullah, I will never leave the side of my uncle. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. After the Imam was left laying on the sands of Karbala, Abdullah al-Saghir ran to him to protect him, calling out, I will never leave the side of my uncle. One of the enemy then came and tried to strike Aba Abdullah al-Hussein with his sword. And Abdullah shielded him with his arm. The sword cut through his arm, leaving it only hanging by
by the skin. Abdullah then turned to his uncle and called out, Amma, oh uncle Aba Abdullah, they have cut off my arm. The Imam tried to console him when another of the cursed enemy struck an arrow through his neck, killing him in his uncle's arms. On the night of the 10th of Muharram, Qasim came to his uncle Aba Abdullah and asked him if he would be amongst the martyrs in Karbala. Aba Abdullah al-Hussein looked at his nephew and said, Qasim, kayfa tara al-maut? Oh Qasim, how do you see death with me? Qasim replied, Oh Aba Abdullah, Oh uncle, wallah, sweeter than honey. The Imam's eyes filled with tears and he embraced his nephew. This is the tragedy, O brothers and sisters, the day of the 10th of Ashura. Qasim came to his uncle seeking permission to enter the battle. The Imam looked at him and said, Bunay, my nephew Qasim, you are all that is left of my brother Hassan. How can I expose you to the strikes of the sword? Go to your mother, O Qasim. Qasim, tears in his eyes, went to his mother. His mother asked him, Lima raja'ta ya Qasim? Why did you come back, O Qasim? Qasim told his mother, Ummah, my uncle Aba Abdullah didn't give me permission. Then his mother went and picked up a box of the remains of Imam al-Hassan. She took out a letter. She gave it to Qasim. She said, give this letter to your uncle Hussein. Then he will give you permission. Qasim opened the letter. Once he read what it says, tears filled his eyes. He said, peace be upon you, Father Hassan. Then Al-Qasim took the letter to his uncle Hussein. He gave him the letter. Aba Abdullah opened the letter. It said, Oh Qasim, إذا رأيت عمك الحسين وحيدا فريدا. If you see your uncle Hussein all alone in Karbala, do not hesitate to die in his arms protecting him. When Imam al-Hussein read this, he looked at Qasim. He said, تعال يا بني. قم وقاسم. The Imam dressed Qasim in clothes that resembled a kafan. Placed the turban of Imam al-Hassan on his head and handed him a sword. He then told him to bid farewell to his mother and relatives before entering the battlefield on foot. Ah, wa Qasima, imagine the scene, a 13-year-old boy going to his mother to say farewell. Ah, one of the enemies recalled, narrates that when Qasim went to the battlefield, he said, a young man came out to face us, sword in hand, his face shining like the moon. While he fought us, his left sandal tore, and he stopped to fix it. But one of us determined to be the one to kill him, struck him on his head as he was bent over, and Qasim fell upon the sands of Karbala, calling out, Amma, adrikni, help me, عم يا حسين. When the Imam heard him, he raced out towards him and killed the one who struck him. When he reached him, he found him laying on the ground, blood pouring from his wounded head. The Imam lifted Qasim's head and held it to his chest, and he said, it weighs heavy on your uncle that you call out to him and he does not answer you, ya Qasim. Or he answers you but does not help you. Or he helps you but does not lift any burden from you. Cursed is the nation that killed you, and they will deal with your grandfather and father on the day of judgment. Ah, wa Husayna. Then Aba Abdullah. Ah, the Imam then called out, oh Allah, cut down their numbers and kill them even more, and do not let a single one escape. Have patience, my Qasim. You'll never see oppression after this day. Ah, the Imam carried Qasim, holding his chest to his chest, and walked him to the tent. Brothers and sisters, who is the patient one that saw the tragedies of Karbala? Who is the mountain of patience? Ya Zainab, that was all called in Karbala. Each martyr that fell on the ground, you would hear Imam Hussein call, oh, Ya Zainab. They have killed Qasim, Ya Zainab. مولاتي سيدتي يا زينب, how much can you stand in Karbala? Holding his chest to his chest, and walked him to the tent, laying him next to Ali al-Akbar. Zainab went inside the tent. She would look at Ali al-Akbar and say, they killed you, Ali. Then she would look at Qasim and say, wa Qasima, they killed you, son Qasim. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا آل محمد أي منقلب ينقلبون والعاقبة للمتقين. إلهي بالقاسم, عجل لوليك الفراج, hasten the return of our Imam to take all evil from this world. Sayyidi, Ya Sahib al-Zaman, where are you now? Are you in Karbala? Or are you at your Zainab? ليت شعري أين استقرت بك النوى. But which land holds you, صاحب العصر والزمان؟ إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا آل محمد أي منقلب ينقلبون والعاقبة للمتقين. دعاء الفرج. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بس بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم كن لوليك حجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة ولياً وحافظاً وقائداً وناصراً ودليلاً وعيناً حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعاً وتمتعه فيها طويلاً